Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Back 23 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Doraville, that's an Atlanta rhythm section, one of their best songs. Doraville looks like Atlanta now. It's not a quaint little country town anymore. It's been sucked up by Atlanta. Welcome back. I'm glad you're here. I'm Jim Blasingame. I am the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. And one from my book, The Age of the Customer, is ageofthecustomer.com. Having a great visit with Jeffrey Zabar, Chief Home Officer. He's an award-winning journalist and one of the top home-based experts on the planet. Jeff, thanks again for being here. We were talking about
a pleasure. I gotta say something, if I may. You know, talking about Atlanta Rhythm Section and talking about what is old being new again. They're out on tour, and
they're the best.
Came to town recently. They're exceptional. I mean, but you know, back when I was a kid, as my kid would say, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth. They were in their heyday with Doraville and with Champagne Jam Not Gonna Let It Bother Me Tonight. And you talk about what's old being new again. And again, they've been slogging along for the past 30 years. They just happened to come to Fort Lauderdale and I saw that they were in town. But, you know, it's great to see them still out there doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And you talk about a small business. I mean, certainly they've been a big enterprise for many years, but it's great to see something like that, a business like that, just keeping true to what they do.
Well, that's the beauty of. I really do believe that's an American phenomenon. I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, but I'll tell you, it's pretty close to being an American phenomenon that people have the ability to continue to make their living doing those things, because what you know, we have such a stratified marketplace. If you think about it, I mean, people are making a living out there, many of them home based, as we were talking about earlier, with selling one thing. There was a guy who used to come here to raise money for the state sheriff's organization. He came here for 10 years. Once a year, he'd call on us, and we'd give him a little bit of money to support the sheriff's organizations. And in the last couple of 3 years, he said, you know, I'm not going to be doing this for very long. And we said, what are you going to do? He said, well, I restore and sell a certain kind of a part to a certain kind of a motor. And he said, I'm eventually going to be where I do that full time. And so in a couple of years, he told us, he said, I won't be back next year. I'm going full-time with my business. And he literally finds a certain kind of a part. I actually don't remember the exact what it was. A certain kind of a part for a certain kind of a motor. He's making a living doing that.
Probably where carburetor he put his job. At this point.
I don't remember it exactly. It was an antique, kind of an antique motor. But my point is people are making a living in America, in our stratified economy. You can make a living on esoteric things.
Right.
It's amazing. Well, I know a guy who's making a living selling turtles, baby turtles. He just started doing it.
Heck, I get those coming off on our street all the time. We get a heavy rain and they come out of the lake across the street.
Well, these are not the endangered ones. These are the little ones. But anyway, it's the beauty of it is you can start from home. And get your idea out of the ground.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, the way the internet has enabled, you know, you and I have spoken in the arc of our relationship, and I've used the concept arc several times. Now that takes me. I'm not allowed to use it now for the next three conversations. But in the arc of our relationship, we've seen us both, you know, use the internet to launch, whether it's your books.
Yep.
And you use, you know, whether the internet for a website or for a social media drive behind it, whether it's the things that I've done, whether it's Got Words, whether it's Home Office Highway, whether it's Road Trip Mojo, my latest endeavor about, you know, traveling the highway in an RV and going to music and arts festivals and things, but or whether it's selling turtles or making, you know, motors that only a few want, the ability to launch it online. to go out and grab a domain for $10, to set up a website, to write about it, to launch social media behind it, and to get out in front of potentially, not that you'd have millions of customers for it, but get out in front of potentially millions of customers, but certainly those who would also be online looking for it. It's pretty dramatic, and it's exciting. It's really exciting times to be an entrepreneur, to be able to take advantage of the tools that we have at our disposal, many of which are free, but still, you know, through social media and the like, you know, it really is something to have that at our disposal and to be able to grow a business from nothing, and just take the thought in your head and the experience that you've gleaned over the years and the passion in your heart and build something. Yep. And it's truly a remarkable opportunity that we have out there.
Exactly. And again, as I come back to this stratification, I mean, you can look around and find something. Of course, you have to know how to monetize it. You got to be able to put it, you know, to find people who want it. But the beauty is the barrier to entry. What we've been talking about is the barrier to entry is so low now. And this portends what our economy is going to look like and how it's going to morph over the next several years. Back to my next interview, we're going to talk about some of that, how the millennials are going to be working and making a living. Hey, Jeffrey, it's a good job today. Come back soon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Jeffrey Zabarley. Give us the websites again, Jeff.
ChiefHomeOfficer.com, GotWords.com, and if you're an RVer, RoadTripMojo.com.
All right. You got to like music to go to that one, too, by the way. Hey, Jeff, come back soon. We'll see you next time. Jeffrey Zabar, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back another day. I'll be back after these messages. I'm Jim Blassie.
If you're trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 877-247-1585. 877-247-1585, 877-247-1585.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD. If you've ever had questions about your health, listen to Healthline Live now online at qnlabs.com every Monday through Saturday. I'll take your nutrition questions live during show hours and guide you the best I can on your path to great health. The key to great health is nutrition, and unfortunately, our food sources are not even close to what they used to be. Go to qnlabs.com and join me to learn about quantum nutrition. Ask your questions and get real answers. I'll give you the truth so you're empowered to make excellent nutrition and lifestyle choices. Remember, each day's show streams 24 hours until the next show, so you can listen at your convenience, from anywhere, anytime. If you miss a show, you can still find it archived on the website. So take advantage of this great opportunity to educate yourself and your family. That's Healthline Live every Monday through Saturday on QNLabs.com.
Hey, this is Daniel French from News for You. Every Monday through Friday, I keep you up to date with a different take on today's news, and maybe I'll even leave you with a smile. It's not just news, it's News for You. If you miss it live, find me on SoundCloud. Just search Daniel French. If you're tired of the left and right wing march of the big news companies, left, right, I am too. We don't do much in the way of politics, but I do provide commentary when I think it's pertinent on News for You, right here, Gab Radio Network. It's not just news, it's News for You.
The liver really takes a beating. For optimal detoxification and liver health, get Quantum Nutrition Labs Liver Support and Quantum Turmeric. Buy two, get the third one free. Call 888-588-7578 or visit us online at qnlabs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of Healthline. Tune in and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family.
Healthline is distributed nationally by the Gab Radio Network. Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened before in the history of the marketplace. Hi, this is Jim Blasingame, and I want to tell you about a new age that's emerging right now, the age of the customer. Until recently, you've run your business with 10,000-year-old age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But the original age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that are conveying control from your business to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're going to market with age of the seller practices when your customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make the transition from old practices to new ones that will allow you to meet these new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blasingame. Thanks for listening.
Jim Blasingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back, 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. Very excited about having our good friend Jared Meyer back on the show. Jared's a great member of our Brain Trust. He's senior fellow at the Foundation for Government Accountability, author of How Progressive Cities Fight Innovation. He's one of the leaders over at Economics 21. He's our good friend Jared. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim.
It's good to have you with us. So one of the things you guys have reported on before, but I wanted you to give us an update on today, is this occupational licensing issue around the country. And remind the audience what an occupational license is, and then tell us where you're hung up about it.
Well, licensing is effectively the need for workers to get a government permission slip in order to work in an occupation. And this goes far beyond people like accountants and lawyers. We now have everyone from manicurists to tree trimmers to interior designers to florists all needing licenses just to work for a living. And we see now about one in every three workers.
I thought for years, a barber or a hairstylist, they needed to have a license, right?
Correct.
And that's been going on forever. But now they're spreading out the requirements now, right?
Well, it's not even spreading to new occupations. It's also making people like barbers and cosmetologists train for longer than before, making them go to school. I was actually in Nebraska working on a bill that would have lowered the number of hours that cosmetologists and barbers needed to train because Nebraska's was close to the highest in the nation.
Right.
And you had a representative from the barber school who, keep in mind, makes money
right.
if people are forced to go to school for longer,
right.
coming in and saying they needed to teach barbers things like how to invest in the stock market,
oh, no.
how to market their business, and even the importance of voting. So while those are all
wow.
important, I don't think the government should be forcing
no.
people to learn that.
That's exactly right. Wow. So when you talk about licensing, are you talking about cities requiring a business license? You're not talking about business license. You're talking about an occupational license where you have to demonstrate to the license issuing company or group that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, so this goes a little bit different than just business licenses, where they're usually on the local level. These are mostly on the state level, and they require sometimes years of training. For example, athletic trainers will need 4 years of training to be able to work in the states that they're licensed in.
So what about, like, tree trimmers? Who's deciding whether people can become a tree trimmer or not? I mean, I know how to use a chainsaw. I could be a tree trimmer.
Hey, my high school job was working on a farm clearing brush. So,
right.
But I was unlicensed because I lived in one of the 43 states that allowed
the horror that we let you trim brush without a license. I'm scandalized here, Jared.
Actually, knowing high school me, I don't know if I would give myself a chainsaw. But the important point is, if one state can get by without me killing, you know, hundreds of people by unlicensed tree trimming, I don't see why other states need
right.
to do this. And just a quick stat for you and your listeners, there's over 1,100 occupations licensed in at least one state. So that's 1,100. But only 60 of them are licensed in all 50 states.
Right. And so you're talking about California, right?
California is one of the worst states when it comes to licensing, unsurprisingly.
Which one's got the 1,000?
Oh, could you say that one more time, Jim?
Which one has the 1,000 licenses?
All right, so that's if you take every license throughout the entire U.S.
I see what you're
saying.
So at least
one state.
No one state.
But my point is only 60, though, are licensed in every state.
Right.
So maybe there's an argument for those 60. But the rest of them, like even manicures, 49 states license it, but Connecticut doesn't. So why do we need licensing if people can survive in Connecticut?
Right. Somehow, Connecticut's the richest state, one of the richest states in the country. Those ladies They don't suffer poor manicures gladly. I can tell you that. I can assure you that they probably pay the highest price for it too. Well, so you guys are staying on top of this, right? You're going to try to beat these people back and make them be reasonable about these things, right?
Yeah, we've been working on some interesting reforms this year. One of the first ones is stopping local governments from creating new licenses, because as bad as state licensing is.
Right.
We know that these special interests who want to limit competition by increasing licensing standards aren't going to go away when we get a state reform.
Look at what happened to the taxis. Look at what a mess that turned into.
Yeah, they don't die easily.
That's right. Good job, Jared. Hold on to that thought. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about millennials and some recategorization of how they're working as Amazon. After the break, 2012. Stay with us.
If you are a CEO, you know success is a matter of getting the right players in the right roles with the right goals. Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. Every coach is looking for the right combination to take their team to the next level. And now you can find the right solution for your business from Insperity. More than 100,000 companies are using Insperity High Performance HR and Business Solutions. From recruiting, employment screening, and retirement services to time and attendance, organizational planning, as well as performance and expense management. Or to move your company ahead as far and as fast as possible, ask about our workforce optimization solution. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your business performance advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com. That's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you. Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened in the history of the marketplace. This is Jim Blassingame, and I want to tell you about an emerging new age, the age of the customer. For 10,000 years, businesses operated with age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But that age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that convey control from you to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're using age of the seller practices when customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make this transition from old practices to the ones that will help you meet those new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. That's ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blassingame, and I wrote this book for you.
And it's a long day living in Reseda. There's a freeway running through the yard. And I'm a bad
boy. Welcome back. 17th till the hour. Thanks for staying with me. It's the late, great Tom Petty bringing us back. I'm Jim Blasingame. I am a small business advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. And the one for my book, The Age of the Customer, is ageofthecustomer.com. Jared Meyer is our guest. He's one of the leaders over at economics21.org and many other credentials he has, if you'll check him out there. Author of How Progressive Cities Fight Innovation and other books. Jared, welcome back. Thanks again for being here. You've been working on some new, some new coverage on how millennials are being treated, how they should be treated or could be treated in the future. Why is it important to be tracking them right now?
Well, millennials are now the largest generational cohort in America,
and 84 as million, coming, right?
Yeah, and they're entering their prime age of working, you know, building up careers. But I think what a lot of people fail to realize is what millennials are looking for from work is a lot different than what I call, you know, my grandfather's workforce. So what worked back in the 1950s isn't going to necessarily work today policy-wise.
Well, we have a lot of 20th century baggage that we're trying to squeeze into the 21st century, and it's not working. What got us here is not going to get us there. On many levels, and I'm glad you're following this. So be specific with us. What do we need to be paying attention to?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is the rise of entrepreneurialism, or at least entrepreneurial desires or dreams from young workers. If you look at survey after survey, finds that about two-thirds of millennials want to start their own business or work for themselves. Mm-hmm. So while all Americans, we've always been entrepreneurial, going back to the founding of our country, but millennials, this desire is even stronger. And what's changed is that now, where previous generations, it was always very difficult to start your own business, and it still is today, but technology is making it increasingly easy for people to fulfill these entrepreneurial dreams.
So are there any more impediments that millennials, I mean, do millennials need some extra kind of entitlement to start a business over what I had, almost 30 years ago? What are you talking about?
Well, I've definitely heard the complaint that millennials are the entitled generation, but
I would never say that, Jared.
But I will say one of the main areas where we've seen changes is that under President Obama, there's been almost a war on independent work. As you know, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know who either run businesses or work for themselves, you can either be an employee in America or an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. And independent contractors, it doesn't come with a lot, you know, like overtime pay, minimum wage protection.
You're a small business owner, basically.
Like that. Yes, yeah, you work for yourself. But what you do get is increased flexibility. So an amazing stat that I found is since the year 2000, all of the growth that we've seen in work has come from independent contractors. There's mm-hmm. actually fewer employees filing W-2s with the IRS today than there was in the
Well, that's because corporate America found a way to do that, and they lowered their expenses in there, and they still got that's been going on really longer than that, because this is the great downsizing, what I call the great downsizing, Jared, started happening in the 70s. It happened all the way through the 90s. And what happened was when those people got downsized, I was downsized twice in the 80s myself. When they got downsized, that didn't mean that the work didn't continue to go on. It just meant that the companies fired their employees and then brought them back as contractors. And many people literally went out and started their own business and served their previous employer and other companies. They had multiple customers. That's one of the markers of a true independent contractor. You have multiple customers.
Yeah, you've got it, because you can, as an independent contractor, more easily focus on your one area. And then rather than giving a portion of your earnings to the company for housing you and providing you with all the benefits, you get to earn more.
But so is there any kind of an impediment? I mean, can millennials not just pick up? Are they not picking up like I did and like other generations have? Do they need something? Is there something we need to do to help them? Do they need help?
Well, thankfully, the Trump administration, I think, took care of the problem, which was that the Obama administration was making it increasingly hard for people to be classified as contractors. Rather than caring about the degree of control that a company has over a worker to determine if they're a contractor or employee, they were looking at your economic reliance on the person who was paying you. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter if you were free from a boss, able to do whatever you wanted. They wanted to tip the scales to make it more likely that people would be determined to be employees, which, again, is something that I don't think young workers want, and it's increasingly today's economy.
But the Obama administration, the IRS decides who's a contractor and who's an employee. They've got a 20-point rule that they use, right?
Yes. The IRS does it, and they use that 20-point rule, which I think is the correct decision. But
that's
the
right.
Department of Labor and the Wage and Hour Division were using the 6-part test that was a lot more difficult.
They were trying to connect. What they were trying to do was to, for union purposes, they were trying to connect employees. They were trying to say employees of franchisees were de facto employees of the franchisor all the way up the chain, and they were trying to aggregate all those employees, right?
With the joint employer rule.
But I'm still not sure where millennials come in here on this.
I think because what you're seeing is they're working at a rate of independent contracting that's higher than other cohorts, and I think that's only going to increase. That they're one of the groups, but there are a lot. Right. Everyone who's trying to work for themselves and build their own business was under threat from these changes that were going on in the Department of Labor.
That's being reversed, but it hasn't been completely reversed. They're having some trouble with that. When we come back, there's something called the Harmonization of Coverage Act. I'm going to ask Jared about that affects millennials.
The human liver is robust, but it really takes a beating. Help keep your liver in ideal shape with Quantum Nutrition Labs Quantum Turmeric in its full spectrum state from growers in India and with Quantum Liver Support for optimal detoxification and liver health. For a limited time, both are on special. Buy 2 bottles, get the third one free. Call 888-588-7578. That's 888-588-7578. Or visit us online at qnlabs.com. That's qnlabs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of Healthline. Tune in to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Our product line, Quantum Nutrition Labs, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works.
Healthline is distributed nationally by the Gab Radio Network.
Warning, don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build for your business to grow, call General Steel today for a pre-engineered steel building designed for your needs. No wasted space. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building. And you can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction. As much as half. But you must call now. If you need a church building, office, warehouse, manufacturing, space, retail space, or more, call General Steel today. You can still get the General's 50-year structural warranty and General Steel quality, all at a price you can afford. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great.
800-965-1297. 800-965-1297. 800-965-1297. That's 800-965-1297.
Daniel French here from News for You, airing every Monday through Friday. Are you tired of the left, right, march of the big news companies? I am too. You know, we don't do much in the way of politics on News for You, but I do provide commentary when I think it's pertinent. Here's the good news. I've had affiliates yell at me because I'm supposedly such a diehard Republican, and others who say I'm such an obvious liberal Democrat shill. Trust me, it's lonely here in the middle and taking fire from all sides, but I call them like I see them on News for You, right here, News for You.
Hi, this is Dennis Sonar Green, Director of Engineering at the Gab Radio Network. If you've missed one of our shows, you can always download it at GabRadioNetwork.com. While you're there, check out our 24-hour listen live stream so you never miss any of our great Gab programming. Give us a like, facebook.com/Gab Radio Network. Remember, you can always shoot me an email, sonar@GabRadioNetwork.com. Thanks for...
Jim, whenever I've asked you how's life, you've always said life is winning. Thank you for dedicating your life to making sure the small business owner comes out a winner.
We sit on different sides of the aisle, and yet we have such wonderful conversations.
You're a tremendous resource to small business owners out there, and I'm proud to call you my friend. From one dinosaur to another, happy anniversary.
We're celebrating our third decade of the Small Business Advocate Show. Thank you for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blassingame, and we're having a great visit with Jared Meyer. He's with Economics 21. Jared, economics21.org, right?
Yep, that's the D.C. portal of the Manhattan Institute.
Right.
And now I'm with the Foundation for Government Accountability as well.
All right.
They're a think tank that works on making sure people can move from welfare to work so that they can rise out of poverty.
Well, there's some news on that front, isn't there? They're working on – some of the people are working on getting people off food stamps, aren't they?
Yeah, when you saw yesterday the president issued an executive order that tells all the executive agencies to prioritize work whenever possible so that people do have that chance to get out of poverty. Because if you don't have a job, you're not rising out of poverty.
Well, the Obama administration just ruined that program. I mean, he doubled the roles of people on food stamps for no particular reason at a time when we were needing workers, when the economy was – you know, when people were hiring, are we going to be able to turn that around, you think?
I think we will, because you're seeing a lot of action in the states. Right now, everyone thinks we already fixed welfare, remembering back in 1996.
No. Well, we did fix it for a while.
Yeah, and the cash assistance program, they still have a strong work requirement. But what happened is after the Great Recession, the Obama administration ended up waiving a lot of the work requirements for food stamps, and they just never got around to having the states re-implement them.
Right.
So it's a case of maybe right when the recession's happening, there's a case for waiving them. But when the economy has 6 million open jobs, I don't understand why states like Pennsylvania continue to waive their food stamp work requirements.
Right. So are the states, if Congress wants to make these changes, can they get the states to make those changes?
They don't even need Congress to act. What happens is FNS and under the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, they approve these waivers. People are supposed to be working to get food stamps, but the Department of Agriculture kept approving the waivers so they didn't have to work. And something that I think should be pointed out is when we're talking about work requirements, it's only for able-bodied adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for the disabled.
It's not about getting children. It's not about taking food away from children or the disabled. It's about people who were put on the roles inappropriately and who could work if they wanted to.
Yeah, and something where it's only after a little bit, like you get time where you're able to receive food stamps, get back on your feet, but then you're not going to be able to rise out of poverty if you don't find a job. Look, 97% plus of people who work full-time year-round are out of poverty. It's the biggest indicator of
what are some of the specific steps they're using to help make this happen? Are they helping with job training? Are they helping them find jobs? What are they doing?
I should also, what the White House wants to do and leaders in Congress is rather than using the savings that you'll get from having work requirements and fewer people on food stamps, they don't want to just get rid of that money. They want to reinvest it in job training. And we all know that America's federal job training programs and their state counterparts aren't the most effective programs.
Right.
But if they are able to update them and consolidate them to reduce confusion for people who are trying to find work, I think there could be some potential there.
They ought to hire contractors to do this to get it out of the government's hands.
Well, we'll see. A lot of the contractors that end up working with the government become almost as bad as the
I'm sure you're probably right, but we know when it's just the government doing it, they're pretty inefficient and not very competent.
Well, and you see a lot of government bureaucrats, they honestly measure success with how many people are enrolled in a program.
It's ridiculous.
That's not how we want success.
Yeah.
We don't want more people.
That's my point.
I mean,
if you turn it over to a contractor, their goal is going to they're going to be measured by how many people they get a job.
Yep, it's all about setting the right incentive. But I think another important point that we should bring up is that Medicaid, the program that's grown even faster than food stamps,
right.
That's another program where now states are asking the Trump administration if they can implement the provenly successful work requirements there.
Right.
Because even though it is, for health insurance, it's something, again, where if they can find a job and start moving themselves up, hopefully they'll be able to move off.
Exactly.
And get to employer-provided insurance or make enough money to buy plans on
It's a crisis right now of not being able to find qualified workers, and it's ridiculous. And we got people who are taking government money who could be working. We got to get that fixed. I'm glad you're tracking that, Jared. Come back soon. Good job today.
All right. Thanks for talking.
Jared Meyer, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back another day. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me.
The preceding show was produced and distributed by the Gab Radio Network.
Hey, Bugsy, you hear the news about Vinny?
Yeah, it's a real shame he owed money to the IRS and they finally caught up with him.
Just like Al Capone.
If the IRS can get the Capone, imagine what they can do to little old Vinny, huh?
Poor cat, he was on top of the world, then bada boom, bada bing.
What Vinny needs now is an offer he can't refuse.
Hey, you got a tax problem? Does the IRS claim you owe them a bunch of dough? They can get you too. So call the Tax Relief Line now and learn if you qualify to negotiate your $10,000 plus IRS tax debt for up to a 75% savings. Don't be like Al or Vinny and get busted. Make this free call now. Learn how you may be able to pay the IRS less.
Call now. 866-657-8521. 866-657-8521. That's
The following show is produced and distributed by the Gab Radio Network.
Welcome to the Small Business Advocate Show with your host, Jim Blasingame. The Small Business Advocate Show is presented by Insperity, dedicated to helping businesses run better, grow faster, and make more money. And now, the man who teaches big business how to help small business and small business how to compete with the big guys.
Kick the tires and light the fires, big guy.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Hello, America, and good day to our friends around the world. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. We've got an outstanding show lined up for you straight ahead. We got a new friend and an old friend joining us this hour. We got the old friend is Jerry Ripperker. He's been hanging out with us now for more than a dozen years. Actually, over 13 years he's been hanging out with us. He's with the Principal Group, Principal Financial Group. And he's going to join us today and talk to us about a very important, very timely demographic issue, a financial slash demographic issue. You know, there are millions of baby boomer owned businesses in America. Millions. And we're not getting any younger, are we, folks? we're now the grandparent generation. Many of us are grandparents. You know what that means? That means that we're getting closer. I call it the fourth quarter. I'm in the fourth quarter of my career. I'm in the top quartile of the baby boomer generation, and I call it the fourth quarter of my career. Not the red zone. I'm not in the red zone yet. I'm in the fourth quarter. Not the 2-minute warning either, just the fourth quarter. That's the story I'm sticking to. So but what that means is that it's sooner than later we're gonna be exiting our business one way or the other, feet first or head first. And Jerry says their research shows there's not a whole lot of succession planning, not nearly enough going on out there on Main Street. So he's going to join us and talk to us about, give us a report on that and some things that their company is doing to help people with that succession planning. Very important topic. That's coming up right after the break. And then in the second half of the hour, Shelley Francis is a new friend. We're going to talk about courage. You know, I believe that you won't find any more courage in the marketplace than anywhere else than you will on Main Street. And so I love talking about courage. I love talking about the different elements of courage and why we need more of it. That's in the second half of the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me.
Your business is now operating when something is happening that has never happened before in the history of the marketplace. Hi, this is Jim Blasingame, and I want to tell you about a new age that's emerging right now, the age of the customer. Until recently, you've run your business with 10,000-year-old age of the seller practices based on having control of customer relationships. But the original age is being replaced by the age of the customer, which is creating forces that are conveying control from your business to your customers. If your efforts aren't producing the same results as before, you might think it's an execution problem, but it's probably that you're going to market with age of the seller practices when your customers have age of the customer expectations. My new book, The Age of the Customer, Prepare for the Moment of Relevance, will help you make the transition from old practices to new ones that will allow you to meet these new customer expectations. Find out more about my ideas and how to buy the book at ageofthecustomer.com. This is Jim Blasingame. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Jim Blasingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com. That's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you.
If you're a business owner, who can you trust to stand shoulder to shoulder with to help your company prosper?
Hello, friends. Jim Nance here. I have seen firsthand the role trust plays in team performance. And now you can have your own business performance advisor to help your company reach your goals. For more than 25 years, Insperity has helped thousands of America's best businesses succeed by putting high-performance HR and business solutions to work. Your Insperity Business Performance Advisor starts with the specific needs of your company and tailors a customized solution to unleash your business potential. If you're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money, call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com and meet with your Insperity Business Performance Advisor today. It's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Jerry Ripperger is here, too. Jerry is VP of Consulting at the Principal Financial Group. He is he's one of the people we turn to when we want to find out what's going on out there in the world of benefits and helping companies with their move forward with their succession planning. That's one of the things we're going to talk about today. And Jerry's been a member of our Brain Trust now for over 13 years. He's our good friend Jerry. Welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and your audience.
It's good to have you back, as always, Jerry. So I was telling the audience before we got here that we're in a period of time right now where we have millions of small businesses founded and owned by baby boomers, and many of them are now in the fourth quarter of their career. And, you know, even though I've got this thing about retirement, I don't plan to retire. I probably will slow down at some point in time. And if I owned a traditional business, which I don't, like a regular Main Street storefront, then I'd be having to think about succession planning. But you're telling us, you were telling my group here that there's not nearly enough of that going on right now in the baby boomer generation. What do you think?
Yeah, and you have brought up multiple good points there, Jim. We're kind of at a unique spot in the history of the United States. Every 57 seconds, a business owner is turning age 65.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to continue for the next two decades. And if you look at the amount of just the investment in the company those pre-retirees have, and we define that as people that are age 55 to 70, it's over $4.5 trillion.
Wow.
So there's this huge amount of wealth locked up in this illiquid asset called private stock.
Right.
You know, you'd made the point, you know, I may not plan on retiring. Well, sometimes somebody else makes that decision.
That's right. We're all going out head first or feet first, one way or the other.
Correct. And the reality is over 70% of these business owners do not have a succession plan in place according to the Exit Planning mm-hmm. Institute. Now, in their mind, merely putting in your will that I'm leaving it to Junior 50 is not a succession.
That's not a succession plan. No, this is a living, breathing organism. This is a tax-paying entity or a tax-filing entity if you've got a business. It's an entity. It's almost a sentient being, and it needs to be treated as such. And it involves a lot of different stakeholders. You got customers who care about the future of your business. You got employees who care about the future, but you got vendors who care. You're important. Your business is important to the economic ecosystem. So there's an obligation here. Well, why do you think it is? You think it's because of denial? You think it's because of ignorance? You think it's what do you think? They think they're going to live forever? What do you think?
I think there's a combination of factors that lead to the 70% not having a succession plan. First of all, it's hard. It's hard. Trying to think about what I'm going to do, that can involve difficult decisions regarding family members, constituencies. You talk about clients, vendors, suppliers, etc. Second, it takes time. And most business owners, they make widgets. They're worried about making a better widget and
right.
selling the next widget, figuring out what version 4 of the widget looks like. Now, what am I going to do with my business 10 years from now, 20 years from now? The reality is the time to write your succession plan, draft 1, because it's a living document, change over time, is when you write your initial business plan.
Right.
You should start the business thinking, how ultimately am I going to extract the value I built out of this business? Or maybe it's transfer the value to a family member, et cetera. And then I need to review that every year.
Mm-hmm.
I need to dig into that, update that, circumstances warrant change.
Well, there's got to be a funding mechanism for these things, though, right? I mean, that's one of the challenges. Even the knowledgeable people, the people who understand they need to do a succession plan, even the ones who understand how it works, many of them are saying, how do we fund this? Isn't that one of the impediments?
Oh, absolutely. And these are businesses that are growing. They're right at that same point where they're trying to figure, how do I provide retirement benefits? How do I provide health insurance? And then how do I fund for this ultimate succession? And there are a full array of tools that can be used, some of which, if you buy them sooner rather than later, are less expensive.
Right.
But there are certainly tools that right up until the day you're ready to sell your company, like mm-hmm. an employee stock ownership, can be put in place.
Are some of them life insurance products? Now, those are good for buy-sell agreements. Those are good for key man insurance kind of approaches, those kinds of things. But those are not necessarily orderly transactions, are they?
Well, they can be if they're well thought out, or they can be a mess if they're not. But, you know, as you think about buy-sell arrangements, clearly life insurance can be a key funding.
Right.
For a buy-sell agreement. And key man insurance can be critical, although a lot of times key person insurance is more about protecting the ongoing viability of the business
right.
than funding the actual sale right. transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And even companies that go down the path of doing something like an ESOP usually aren't selling all of the company to
right.
the ESOP. In fact, the majority of ESOPs in the country are minority positions.
Oh, really? Oh, so
in
ESOP, the whole company ownership doesn't change hands all the time?
Oh, no, not at all. And even those that have moved to 100% ownership by an ESOP typically do that in multiple tranches.
Ah.
They don't do that all at
once. I didn't know that.
It's very
huh.
Yeah, it's very common for someone, let's say in their early 50s, to want to have a diversification.
Right. What is the minimum number of employees, or what is the number? The sales volume, the profit, and number of employees? What is the rule of thumb minimum that you need to have to do an ESOP, employee stock option plan?
Yeah, I'll give you a rule of thumb. I'm always nervous because we already know rules of thumb are wrong, but
right.
at least they're directional.
Quickly, and then we'll
and
talk about it in the next segment.
Okay.
Give me a quick number.
Okay. 330,300, 3 million in value, 30 employees, 300,000 in net income after tax.
There you go. Okay, that's a good rule of thumb there, folks. I want to get Jerry to give us more of that. This ESOP thing is a good plan for a lot of baby boomer small businesses. 20 after Jared's.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest. From technical engineering to full-service audio production and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and Talkin' Pets, send an email right now to sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
This is Dr. Mitch Gibson from The Mitch and Kathy Show. Have you ever wondered why you can't talk to people about certain things. Every day we go through life holding back on what we really want to talk about. Yes, there's a lot of talk shows that give you a chance to air your opinions about politics, race relations, and a host of other topics that you're supposed to be thinking about. Well, what about those other areas that you hold back on, such as that ghost you saw when you were a kid, those times when you travel outside your body, that UFO you can't talk about, that you saw in your backyard, those strange people that appear and disappear around you, and you know you're not crazy? On the Mitch and Kathy Show, we give you a chance to talk about stuff like that, things that you hide from the world. In this way, we consider ourselves a guilty pleasure.
Visit themitchandkathyshow.com for more information, or go to gabradionetwork.com.
Daniel French here from News for You every Monday through Friday. I keep you up to date with a different take on today's news, and I may even leave you with a smile. It's News for You, a five-minute news and commentary broadcast featured. I've had affiliates yell at me because I'm supposedly such a diehard Republican, and others who say I'm such an obvious liberal Democrat shill. It's lonely here in the middle and taking fire from all sides. Get News for You for your station. Just email sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
Hi, this is Dennis Sonar Green, Director of Engineering at the Gab Radio Network. If you've missed one of our shows, you can always download it at GabRadioNetwork.com. While you're there, check out our 24-hour listen live stream so you never miss any of our great Gab programming. Give us a like, Facebook.com/GabRadioNetwork. Remember, you can always shoot me an email, sonar@GabRadioNetwork.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. 23 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame. I am a small business advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. The one from my book, The Age of the Customer, is ageofthecustomer.com. Having a great visit with Jerry Ripperger. He's VP of Consulting at the Principal Financial Group, an organization we've been telling you about for a long time. They do great work out there helping small businesses with their benefits, with their insurance, with their consulting on how to put their best foot forward as they move through the generations of ownership of their businesses. And right now, Jerry, we were just talking about ESOPs. I know that's something you guys spend a lot of time trying to help people with. And you said, I ask you for a rule of thumb of what is the minimum that people need to do an ESOP. And you said 30 employees, $3 million in revenue, and $300 in net income. Is that net, or is that EBITDA? What is that?
Well, in order to keep it simple, we'd call it $300,000 in net income after taxes.
Okay, after taxes. All right.
Yeah, I mean, EBITDA would be a better measure, but it doesn't work nice and
easy. It's a little more complicated. I understand, but anyway, so I'm sure if it got close, we wouldn't quibble, right?
No, like I said, it's a rule of thumb.
I'm sure you can. We can work it out. So okay, tell the audience what an ESOP is.
Yeah, an ESOP is an employee stock ownership plan. It is a qualified retirement plan that you can use to transfer the ownership of your company to your employees over time. And through the ESOP, we do a couple different things that are very important. First, we create that liquidity for the selling business owner so that they can extract the value they've built in that business. But second, we protect the legacy of that business. So often when a business sells, particularly in today's environment where the value may be intellectual property, intangible,
right,
you know, brand names, et cetera. With an ESOP, the jobs are much more likely to stay in that community, mm-hmm. more likely to grow there.
Right.
So it's really a legacy component as well.
And in addition, I want to talk about the financial plan in a minute, but do you help companies, if you help them with their ESOPs, do you help them value their business? Do you help them learn how to and understand how to place a value on the business?
Sure. What we do is we have a network of people we work with around the country that are certified valuation experts.
Especially by industry, probably, right?
Right. And there's people who are experts in ESOPs, for example, so they really understand what an ESOP does to the balance sheet, what the tax benefits are, and how to value that properly.
Right. Do you look at the cross section of the stakeholders? Would it be is it possible that a company might that their stakeholders are just in such a condition that they probably wouldn't be successful as an ESOP? Do you ever rule an organization out like that?
All the time. No one wins if you put an ESOP in place and it's not a good fit.
Yeah, if people can't get along, you don't have a certain kind of leaders. You know, the kind of leaders that can step up and step into the breach and take over, right?
Yep, and what we often tell people, Jim, though, is anytime you're looking to sell your company, that successor management team is critical, whether you're selling it to an ESOP, selling it to a competitor, to a third party. That successor management team will have much to do with determining the future value of that company.
Right. Financials. So now let's talk about the financial part. How do you guys help make that happen?
Well, we work with business owners to look at the feasibility of an ESOP to see whether or not it's an appropriate fit for them, to help them understand what that transition period would look like, because an ESOP is a transition over a period of time. If you tell me I need to sell my company in 3 weeks, an ESOP is not the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell me I want an orderly transition over, you know, a period of years, an ESOP may be a good fit.
What's the minimum for an ESOP? 3 years, 5 years?
You know, I would say, well, there is no hard and fast minimum because a lot of it's going to depend on the quality of that successor management
right.
team. We have some where the owner sells and rides off into the sunset because he or she has done a great job of preparing that company to move forward without them. But usually that minimum is going to be set by the lending institution that lends into that ESOP.
Right.
Because they're looking at that owner saying, you're the one who built this company. We'll feel much better about getting paid back if
right.
you're still there. At least a significant part of the life of the company.
Well, and also it'll probably depend on how well the financials have been documented and set up, and how difficult it's going to take to recast the financials, right, for the new entity. I would think, you know, if you've done a good job of being true to your numbers, and you've been recording that, you've been working with your banker, you've got maybe even have an audited statement, that would speed things up, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you raised such an important point there, Jim. Because so often, particularly with these growing businesses, it's very difficult to separate the company's financials from the owner's financials.
Right.
That's a blurry line
between them. That's where the recasting comes in.
Absolutely, because we need to have a clear line of delineation once we put the qualified retirement plan in place on the financials.
Because once an ESOP is in place, the whole family business thing goes away. I mean, there's no more of the fuzzy lines as you say there that you got. Hey, Jerry, how do folks contact you if they want your help?
They can learn more about ESOPs at www.principal.com/ESOP benefits.
Okay.
And there's a contact us section on there.
All right, so check that out. Hey, Jerry, good job today. Keep up the good work and come back soon.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Jerry Ripperger, ladies and gentlemen, of the Principal Financial Group. Check them out. I got to take a quick break. I'll be right back after these messages. I'm Jim Lysinger.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.